Hello, welcome to this week's episode of the Let's Get Running podcast. How is the Caramel Kid, Jermaine Mays?
What's the devil, Sean and Sean said?
He's doing good. It's a Friday morning today. Friday, we're recording early. We're going out on Monday, but we're Friday morning record. And it's a nice day in Amsterdam. How's it doing in London?
It's all right at the moment. It was raining yesterday, but it's all right.
Fantastic. Well, you see, the first news I should bring you is news of the Battle of the Podcasts. We're going to have a little clip in a minute where we're going to discuss with Greg and Bren the winners. So drum roll, that's going to come very shortly. But first, how are you doing? What have you been up to on the buses?
Oh boy. So more problems with the X68.
Right.
So I'm convinced this route is going to, there's going to be loads of stories on this route. So I've got to go from Campbell World to Russell Square to start the journey, but I'm out of service. Yeah. There's a taxi demo in London, so it's gridlocked.
Yeah.
So it takes me half an hour to get from the Old Vic and Waterloo to Aldwych.
Yeah.
So the controller rings me up and says, forget Russell Square, just start. It wanted me to start Waterloo, but I said, I'm already on the bridge, I can't turn around.
Yeah.
And so he says, oh, start Aldwych. So I changed my blinds to say I'm ready to be in service. But I have to go past one of the bus stops I'm not supposed to serve. It's packed. So I have to quickly change my blinds back, and people are running for the bus through traffic. Right? I'm like, crap. So I pull up Aldwych. Everyone's bundling into a bus, tutting, you know, giving me, they're upset.
Yeah.
And then I get to Waterloo, same thing. Obviously, people are upset because the traffic's so bad.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, I turn not the way the bus is supposed to go.
Yeah.
And then some guy comes up to me and says, I need to get off. I says, oh, the next stop's West Norwood, which is like 40 minutes away, yeah?
Yeah.
He goes, no, I need to get off now. I says, sorry, you can't. And he goes, I'm an American citizen. I have rights. I was like, what? He says, you're detaining me against my right. I said, no, I ain't. I said, I ain't strapping you down to the chair. I said, wait. He says, I'm going to record this and I'm going to go to the embassy. I was like, go on then. But, so he was making me mad. Right?
Jermaine, the hostage taking bus driver.
He says, I'm American citizen. So I was like, who are you? Did Donald Trump fart on you? I said, you're no one. Yeah, you know, I'm American citizen. I said, we're in England. And then, so someone else opens the doors,
yeah,
like themselves, and then loads of people just pile off because they all got on the wrong bus.
Yeah.
So that's, I can't do anything like that. So I let them get off and close the doors.
Yeah.
And then my bus is quiet. It's all peaceful. Then I get to West Norwood, and then I'm two stops away from the stop where I have to stop. And a woman comes up to me. She's got a broken neck and she's a Zimmer frame. She goes, do you know I'm a Nigerian citizen? And I started laughing. Right? And she goes, can you let me off? One stop before the stop I'm supposed to let everyone off of. I let her off because it's so funny. And she was in a spot of bubble with a Zimmer frame and a broken neck. So I was like, okay, I'll let you off.
So that's the new way to try and get us to bus to stop. I am a citizen of somewhere else.
Yeah.
I like it. Nice.
What about you? What have you been doing?
I've been enjoying the running. I think that like everybody else, we've got about 3 weeks to go before London Marathon. So time is running out. But it's nice. I'm happy about what I'm doing, because usually every single marathon I've been in for, like, you've always got in the back of your mind, oh, I could have been doing more, I could have done that, I've missed that opportunity. But now, because I've got a baby and I haven't got much time, I've got to work and all this sort of stuff, I've just been thinking, like, you know, it is what it is. I've done what I can do. I couldn't have done any more than I've tried to, so there's no point worrying about it. So I'm pretty good place, I reckon. And I did a session the other day, 5x4K, like at marathon pace, so 3-minute 20Ks. And the first three, I was pretty much bang on, but I was working hard, but it was bang on. So in between each one, I had a K float, which is at 340, 345 minute per K. So it was total workout.
So that was a recovery.
Yeah. So it wasn't really a recovery. You were still kicking on a bit, but you were under control, sort of thing. And I was going really well. I was on the fourth one, and I'd done, on that last one, I'd done sort of three, 3:20, 3:21. So I was bang on for average 3:20, and suddenly the heavens like opened, and basically there was this hailstone, and I swear the wind changed direction, and these hailstones were just hitting me in the mouth. And you know, like when you're like a you know, like a turtle has like his bottom lip comes out, and I swear my face was in like such a frown that the hailstones were whacking me in the bottom of my lip, and I got to the end of that cave, which is 3:28, because it was so hard to run it, and I had to take a break and try and get under some cover. So I left it about 5 minutes. It stopped, but it was still raining so heavy, and it was the cloud that you know when the sky just looks like grey for miles. And I thought, oh shit, I've got to run back in this. So I ran back the rest of the way. Pouring rain. I managed 3:30s average on the way back. So do you know what? It was fine. I got hit by loads of hailstones in the face. I had a turtle mouth. Yeah, so it was all good.
Turtle mouth. I like it. I like it. Turtle.
We're gonna have a quick chat of Bren and Greg now. We're gonna see who won the first inaugural Battle of the Podcasts challenge. Here we go. So it's the end of March. The Battle of the Podcast is over. And I'm here discussing the results with Greg Lemelstein and with Bren Jones. How are you both doing?
Doing great. Thanks for having us, Sean.
Good to have you. You're both, great, represent, Sean. Both representing Cloud 259.
That's right.
You got it.
And I've been let down by my fellow podcast host who just texted me a little bit of time ago and just said, yeah, I can't make it tonight. So it's just me on my own. So I should be docked points, or we should be docked points for not being able to finish off the show, the challenge with a synopsis. But anyway, but we're here now.
Jermaine's got to put the pedal to the metal. He's got to realize he's got to drive that bus quicker.
Yeah.
Priority.
Yeah, he's practicing. He's at home just sort of twisting his hands around in a wheel shape and getting himself ready for the for tomorrow's shift. But hey, but we should start by looking, we're not going to announce the final result just yet. We should go through looking at how we both got on. And I guess we should start with how you guys both got on in your challenge. How did you both run? What was your final results? Starting with you, Greg.
I think I'll start. It was I had tremendous fun doing this the entire competition, but it also did exactly what I had hoped for myself. It was a great motivator. And I was able to PB at the big half. And I think a lot of your listeners were also able to PB. A lot of them are heading into a spring marathon, sometimes London, sometimes Boston.
Yeah.
So it was exactly as I had planned, and just a lot of fun. So
yeah. I don't know how we all managed to PB at the big half, because it was not an easy day to PB on, but nice one for doing it.
Yep. Well, you guys really crushed it at the big half, I have to say. Yeah. And in this part of the competition, you just beat us by a long shot. You were very kind on a recent show, Sean, where you said, you know, you were a little ahead of us. I mean, you clubbed us. The average of your times, yours and Jermaine's, was an hour 15. And our average was about 13 minutes behind that. So
you got us by a minute per mile.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So yeah, Bren had to do was run a 64-minute half marathon. PB, I think, is 121, Bren, right?
So 121, yeah. And knowing that, Sean, knowing that I needed to run about a 104.
Yeah.
My motivation was very weak heading into it. I've already apologized on our show to our listeners. I'm sorry. Won't happen again. Hired a coach. Next time, I'll be better.
I was going to say, the coach is going to get you that time down.
I came around at 1:30 and change. It was a great race for me, though. Given my level of fitness, I thought I had a good day out there. So I was happy about it. And the competition is fantastic. So,
great.
Congrats to you, Sean, and to Jermaine. Both you guys really came through.
Yeah.
And so I was happy after we had not won the host competition that we had two other categories.
Yes.
Total participants and then the scoring, cross country scoring for our men and for our women.
Yeah.
So that I thought is where it really got very interesting.
Yeah.
And indeed it came right down to the wire.
Yeah, absolutely. So should we go through our first five male and first five female participants then? And shall I kick it off
Sounds
from
good.
Our side?
Sounds great.
Good. You had some people who are a lot faster than we are.
Yeah, I was just saying off air then that I didn't realise how quick some of them went, but there was Ronnie Richmond was our fastest participant, and he was the fastest overall from both sides, running 105.44 at Bath this year. Closely followed, I think, did you say, Greg, that he also ran a 107 a week before that?
That's right.
Yeah, wow.
Some people were right. Yeah, he improved on his already amazing time by 2 minutes.
Fantastic. And he today he ran the Manchester Marathon. You said you've noticed a social post about he wasn't too happy about that. But
well, he said he ran a 2:21, and he said it was battling the flu.
Wow.
So he's quite a runner.
Yeah, I think the win only won in 1:21 as well. I think today at Manchester. So so yeah, must have been close to the victory. Hold up, we got that completely wrong. Ronnie Aaron Richmond didn't only run 2:21 at Manchester, he won by about 5 minutes. So congratulations, Ronnie, our fastest listener, I think, this year. Nice one, mate, for the victory. Sorry for underestimating your achievement today at Manchester. Well done, buddy. And back to the show. But anyway, he was our fastest mare. We had Andy Coley-Maud, a friend of mine from Highgate. He ran 107.12, the Surrey half. Richard McDowell, or the Turbo Ferret, as he likes to be called, he ran 110.08. We had Aidan Johnson in 112.37. He was at the Retford half. Richard before was at the Palace half. And finally, Hugh Torrey at the Big Half. He ran 113.07. So that was the men from my side. The females, let's get running. We had Tamara Amush, also at the Big Half, 1:15.01. We had Sarah Hanley, again Big Half, 1:24.31. Jodie Fisk ran 1:25.59 at Bath. And we've got two more. We had Claire Coley-Maud, a.k.a. CCM on Strava. She ran a 1:36 dead on March 24th. And Laura McCrave, she finishes off with 1:55.31. It's a nice one there from the boys and girls of Let's Get Running. How about you guys? How did you go?
Well, I noticed that Tamara Amush, that 1:15, incredibly fast. She runs, she's running the world championships, I think, on the track for Jordan. So,
oh, right. Wow.
I think she lives in the UK and she's run for Jordan. So you've got some, you've got some fast runners.
Yeah, we've done well to recruit, I think, there. So nice one, Tamara. Nice one.
But we've got some swift ones on our side. Maybe not as deep, but Phil Dickens, my good friend with Cambridge Harriers, he ran a 1:12.26 at the Big Half.
Nice.
He's looking to break 2:30. He's just been on the edge of 2:30 in the London. So good luck to him in a couple of weeks at London. Our second male was Lee Fedden, who actually works for my company here in London. He ran a 1:13.02.
Nice.
Lee's an amazing runner. He didn't know he was an amazing runner until he turned 35 or something, and he's just got a lot of talent, and he's just learning really how to do this, and he's already smoking fast.
Wow.
Our third male was David Scholl, who lives in the Philadelphia area. He ran a 1:15.27 at the New York City Half, which was the other big marathon during March across the pond. Another Cambridge Harrier, James McDonald, ran a 1:15.47 in a tremendous beard, as he always wears, in the wind, in that kind of wind, with that kind of beard. It's impressive.
Yeah.
And then our fifth, Lars Sandbu, up in Norway, at the Fredrikstad half. He ran a 1:18.12. So congrats to all those great, great performances.
Yeah. I think you should also get points for the most, I was going to say exotic. Norway's not exotic, but it's the most international half marathon of the lot, I think.
Yeah, good point. Yeah. And I think Bren was going to announce our women's top runners.
Yeah, so I'll try to inject a little bit of drama here. So the Let's Get Running, Sean, your male team took that, so that brought you up to 1.5 points out of a possible 3 points, securing at least a tie. In the total participants, Cloud 259, we got you 46-34, 35. So it all came down to the women. And this is, it was very close among the women. So a huge hats off to the women who ran for us. Lauren Perkins ran a 1:18. Greg and I had her on the show as a guest, and we've mentioned her name a few times, given the fantastic running she does in New York City. We had Erica come in second for us at an hour 30:29. Annie Goh, Greg, a friend of ours and runner, fellow runner in Central Park Track Club, ran 1:38:59 at the DC half. We had Mikola Shremshok ran the Tokyo Marathon in an hour 42. We had Michelle G run in Redlands, California. She ran a 1:50:27. We had Beth Burks run for us in Wales, Anglesey half. Is that how you pronounce it?
Anglesey.
1:50:47. We had my sister ran, did a training run, Greg, 13.1 training run on just about the last day of March. She was psyched to run 1:57:34. She got under two on a training run, which is fantastic. And she was, you know, it was great to see her running for us. And we had Jenna Colon also, who, Greg, we interviewed on the show. She finished 2 hours and 35 at the New York City half. So she was out there also. So we're thrilled for the women who competed for us. And thank you, thank you, thank you, everyone who joined the group. And I was psyched, Greg, that the reason this whole thing was so close was because our women came through.
Fantastic. Wow. Yeah, and there were a lot of runners running, you know, taking one half of their marathon or doing training runs, and a lot of half marathon race PBs. So just there were many different ways that people were able to participate. And we had 80 total people on the list here with times, and 164 overall in the Strava page. So I think there might have been some races left out there, not recorded, but that's okay.
Yeah,
it was just a good motivation, I hope, for many, many people.
Absolutely. Great stuff. So we're on again next March.
Or sooner. Let's talk, Sean.
Yeah, sounds good. Fantastic.
We can get creative. We can change. We can do a different event. Anything but the 1500 steeplechase. We're not doing that.
Yeah. I don't think many people on the globe have done 1500 meter steeplechase. I think Jermaine's quite lucky. It's not a very popular sport. But anyway. Yeah.
We should mention, we mentioned on our show that really hats off to Jermaine. I think you ran blazing fast, Sean. So congrats to you. But Jermaine may have been the MVP because it was outside his comfort zone and he came up big with a what was it, a 1:19?
Yeah, or 1:21.
Yeah,
it's fantastic. And seeing him before those, you very rarely see Jermaine nervous. And I think that was one moment when he looked visibly frightened by having to start that race in that wind when he hadn't run over an hour and a half in about, you know, I think probably 10 years. Actually, he's never run in more than an hour and a half. So he was slightly nervous beforehand. So well done to Jermaine. Nice one for doing that. Excellent. Well, thanks, guys, for chatting, and great to have the competition. Really enjoyed taking part, and we're ready for the next challenge. We'll have to put some. There is a great trophy. You sent over a photo earlier, Greg, for the inaugural championship. I'm gonna have to have some photos of Jermaine receiving the photo at some stage, perhaps on a bus somewhere around the city of London.
That's right.
Yes,
we'll either give it to him or a bus. That would be ideal. If not, maybe at the start of the London Marathon, I could present it to you.
Perfect.
Before you speed off and trounce me by 45 minutes or something.
Well, I'm not sure if I'm quite in that shape, but we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, Sean, huge congrats to you, and just to round up, to put a bow on it, as Greg mentioned, you won the host category 1:15 to 1:28 as an average time. On the men's side, the cross country scoring was 18:43. So those who are familiar with the cross country scoring, the low score wins. Mm. Total participants, we won. So it came down to the top women, and that was just a squeaker, Sean. Mm. Let's Get Running takes it by 27:29. So extremely close. Congrats overall. That's 2 points for you, 1 point for us. And Greg, we won the race for the Golden Toad a few years ago, but hats off to Let's Get Running for winning the inaugural Battle of the Podcast.
Great stuff. Well, thanks, guys. Great to chat, and we'll catch up again soon.
Sounds good. Care. Thanks, Sean.
Take care, Sean.
We've got a great interview this week. We're speaking to Shelia Kipp. Now, Shelia is an Olympian. She ran Atlanta 2012 in the steeplechase for America, for USA, I should probably say. She's also a...
Wait, is she an American citizen?
She's like, an American citizen. She can get off, she can get off your bus whenever she likes, Jermaine. Don't you dare hold her hostage. She's also a chef. She has a website called therunnerskitchen.wordpress. Where she has various recipes that she's come up with. She's also a scientist, so she takes part in various bits of research and really interesting stuff. We're going to chat about that, including she was part of the research looking into Nike's 4% shoe. So the reason why it's called the 4% shoe, you see it in all the shops, is because of Shelia's research. So that's really interesting. She's going to talk a lot about that in a moment. But it made us think about science and running, how it's changed, even in our short lifetime. Me and Jermaine are now... Are you 36, Jermaine?
Yeah.
Yeah. How science is...
I don't look it, but I am.
The caramel is smooth. So even in our lifetime, like, running has changed because of the impact of science. Like, what sort of things, like, has it changed? I know you're not running as much now, Jermaine. What sort of things did you start using throughout your career?
When we first started running, there was no like heart rate monitors and stuff.
Yeah.
So we just ran.
Yeah.
And then, but I think it goes down to like what stage of the career you're at.
Yeah.
Like, I know a lot of people now, they always use their heart rate monitor. I didn't use a heart rate monitor because I just ran sort of how I felt.
Yeah.
So if I was tired, I'd just go slow.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but like, good iPod, you know, like listening, because before even like Walkman or Discman is like big and bulky, yeah?
Yeah.
And then when obviously iPod or, you know, like the Nano come out, you could run this. But
yeah,
for me, that was good when I was trying to get back into running.
Yeah, okay.
Because obviously it's hard to get motivated to go out. So if you listen to a bit of music, you know, like it makes it a bit easier.
Yeah.
But I think for when I was running at my best, the best bit of tech was probably an Ice Vest.
Oh, right. Okay. Oh, we talked about this before. Yeah, you used to have it before races and stuff to keep you nice and cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so because obviously, back talking about science and tech, I knew that it was keeping my body cooler.
Yeah.
And obviously, I'd race better. So that's probably the best bit of tech I used.
Yeah, okay, yeah. I'm trying to think what I use, because I don't know, really. I do look at Strava, and I do use my GPS watch. So, like, I just gave the example of that session I was doing the other day. I was looking down on the GPS after every kilometre. Whenever it beeped, I'd look down to see what time I was doing. So I think they are really useful for marathon runners. Like, in that sort of situation, when you're looking to try and run marathon pace, I wouldn't be without my GPS watch now. I don't think I could be able to do it unless I had a measured course. So it just gives you loads more flexibility in what you're doing.
I think what it helps with, because in the old school, you needed someone else, like a bit of help, or you like you said, you work out or do a pre-measured course. Now it's easier to be a self-coach, because obviously you can take your own splits and all that stuff.
Yeah, definitely.
So that probably helps.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's useful. It's not, if I was running cross country, if I was focused on cross country, or I was focused maybe on the 5K, 10K, I don't think I'd use it as much. Because for the cross country, when I was best at cross country, when I was running then, I used to just go down a park and just run intervals and reps and tempos on the grass and not worry at all what I was doing in terms of like pacing. I just run it as hard as I possibly could. Do you know what I mean? For the effort I thought I could give at that time. Does that make, like you were saying earlier, like you ran to feel.
Yeah.
People can get really bogged down if they're doing the shorter distances in having, you know, these GPS and doing splits and stuff. I just think, if you're running a shorter distance, in a way, just get out there and push hard. And I also think
I think it's a negative effect, because also you have to check your watch. And when you check your watch, that's like half a second that you're not in a natural running motion. So you're out of sync when you're running.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I don't think I'd use anything ever tech-wise. I do use a little iPod. I use a Mighty. These are great, these little things, Mighty, if you ever see them. Like, they're basically, you know, like the iPad Shuffle, but they sync to your Spotify account. So, yeah, I wouldn't be anywhere about my little Mighty, particularly on my long runs.
Obviously, but when you first started, there was no such thing as that. So, obviously, we ran without it.
Yeah. I don't know whether I enjoyed it more. I don't know, probably, when I think about it now, I use it as a crutch. Like you were saying, when you're getting back to running, you need a bit of motivation. You do use that sort of thing, like,
But you when you was at your peak of your powers, you didn't.
Oh, no.
I need my iPod because you're so motivated because you want to go and beat your rivals. You don't, yeah. Like, you think, you're not worried about the music.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. I think I need to wean myself off a little bit of that sort of thing.
Wean myself off.
Yeah, but it's funny because I went to the that marathon I won the other week in Amstelveen. I'm dropping that again. A marathon I won. but like I was taking my iPad with me, my mighty thing, my music player with me, and thinking, oh, I better take this because otherwise I'm going to be on my own, and if I'm on my own, I'm going to get bored. And it's like, for God's sake, it's a race. You're involved in a race. Why are you thinking about taking like music with you? And I didn't. Yeah, that's end. So it's stupid.
Because it's like when people wear the watch in a race.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you should be racing the actual race, like racing people. We don't worry about trying to do, you know, like time trialing.
Yeah. And I guess
obviously it is different when you got super long list like marathon and stuff.
Yeah, but so Scott Overall never wore a watch, and I didn't until recently. Right, the only reason I started wearing a watch in like even on marathons was because I wanted to have the Strava data afterwards, like for the show. Do you know what I mean? Which is really stupid. So like I wanted to have it a Strava record so I could put it for the purposes of publicising the show or whatever. I don't know what I was thinking. But I don't like looking at a watch when I'm racing. I remember I've been in 10K races and you're like, you'd look down after 2K and you'd think, oh, right, it's 6:06. So therefore next K, if I run 3 seconds quicker and then the next K after that, another 3 seconds quicker, I'll be back on pace for sub 30. But then you think, by the time you spent all that time making those calculations, you've ruined the race because you're not thinking about what you're supposed to be doing. So...
Someone's pulled away. Or, yeah, you ain't paid attention.
Yeah. But I mean, there's plenty of appetite. There's all these things like foam rollers, and I guess they're not tech, but there's all these different. There's loads.
Well,
of
that's
stuff
more
now.
That's like tech in terms of injury prevention rather than performance enhance. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because you think if you talk about like a 4% shoe, obviously the 4% enhance your performance rather than a foam roller. Yeah. So I guess it's different type of tech.
Yeah, and I think there are things out there that can help. Like we're going to be speaking soon to DNA Fit, who are going to look at, I don't know if you call this tech or not, but they're going to look into my genetics and give us some suggestions about how I could, going forward, improve my performance. So I've taken some swabs. We're going to be doing that in a few weeks live on the show.
So you're going to fight... You're going to find that your ancestors are from like Ghana or something.
Yeah. I don't want Ghana, man. That's on the west coast of Africa. I want east coast Africa. Yeah.
Well, like you ain't that talented, so it must be from the other side, isn't it? You ain't that talented.
Yeah. But let's have a chat to Shilea. She's going to talk about the 4% shoe and her career. Obviously, very interesting to be part of the 2012 Olympics. And she's done a bit about steeplechase, which should be good for Jermaine. But here she is now. So this morning I am talking to Olympian, scientist and chef over in America, Shilea Kipp. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you, Sean?
I'm doing very well. And you're over in Boulder, and I was just doing some research kind of about what you're up to, and you're in an incredible situation, really. You're running, you're training, you're researching running, and you're cooking and refueling your running. What an incredible situation for everyone.
Exciting life. But I just moved up from Boulder up to Vancouver, British Columbia.
No, okay, right. But still at altitude, right?
Still, no altitude.
Oh, no, sorry. I got it all wrong. But Vancouver's a nice city to live in, right? It's still a good situation.
It is still a great situation, and I miss Boulder, yes.
Okay, yeah. But I have got it right. You were an Olympian.
This is correct. Yeah.
Yeah. That's okay. I can get one tick on the box for that.
So
looking at your situation, obviously you are running. Your research is mainly based around running and that sort of thing. When did you become so obsessed with running? When did you start getting involved with the sport?
Does anyone really know that answer? When did you become obsessed with running? Isn't it something that gradually happens over time?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I guess really, what runner doesn't really become interested in their own body, their own physiology, what's happening? I was a young undergraduate collegiate runner at the University of Colorado, and I just wanted to know what was happening to myself. Mm. And I joined a research lab, and you, I guess, essentially become more and more obsessed with asking those questions of what's going on. I get very interested in performance-based questions. How can you get faster? And I think it just snowballed from there.
Were you studying sports science then as an undergraduate, or did you just?
I did.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. I was studying integrative physiology.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. But were you always? When did you start actually running? When did you start getting involved with the sport?
Yeah, I started running around middle school. I think that's what you would call it. It was still just kind of laps around the outdoor field then, but that would be my first, you know, start of joining cross country races, and kind of that bug bit me around middle school. That's, how old are you? 13, 14 yeah. In the States then. Yeah.
And what was the culture like then in terms of running? Was it in your town or there you live? Was it a big running culture there?
Not huge. It was pretty relaxed. I would say most of us were doing it for fun. You know, you're there for the popsicles after. You jump in the local 5Ks with your family, but it wasn't this super competitive attitude. It was more this fun community thing.
Yeah. And did you go to college with the intention of running competitively at the end of NCAAs and things?
Yeah. By the end of high school, I was realizing I wanted to run more competitively, and that was possible. And University of Colorado is a good running school over here in the States, and I went there, and I was, of course, not top dog at all. There's so many fantastic runners, especially in Boulder. And you gradually starting to train with those people, you become more and more serious, and you realize more of your own potential.
Yeah, okay. And was there a point you noticed, either at college or after, that you had potential to do this, to be an Olympian and to be a professional runner?
Yeah, I'd say it didn't really hit me until, winter of 2011. And, you know, 2020 Olympics are right around the corner. And all of a sudden, your college coach pulls you aside and, you know, tells you, hey, it's not unrealistic to start thinking about the Olympics. And that's when it really hit me. So I would say I was still 6-7 months out from the Olympics. And then I realized, oh, this is possible if I really put my head in the game.
Yeah, and it was steeplechase that was the distance you went for. When did you start
steeplechase
jumping over barriers?
So I started my freshman year of college. I was pretty late into my freshman year of college. Our coach said, you know, let's try going over some hurdles after your run today, and I stayed and did that. And the next day I asked if he wanted me to stay and do some more hurdle practice, and he goes, oh no, it's all right. I think we have different ideas for you. So I was a terrible, terrible hurdler.
Okay.
And then about a month later, he said, let's just try a water jump. Let's see what you look like over the water. It was almost what he said, perfect. He said, I think we can fix the hurdles. If you're not scared of the water jump, you could be a steeplechaser. And so late into my freshman year, I became a steeplechaser.
Wow. And then obviously then you have to do a lot of work at that. And you did you win the US trials, or were you in the top three at the US trials for 2012?
I was third at the 2012 trials. Yeah.
Wow. So that's from, when did you start doing it? When did you, as a freshman year. So you'd have been from.
So freshman year and then junior year would have been the trials.
Wow. So within a year, you were then.
Yeah. So about 2 years and.
That's incredible. Fantastic.
Sometimes it clicks into place.
Yeah. And obviously running there, the trials, did you think you were in with a chance coming up to the US trials? Because it's quite a difficult system, isn't it? You can only be in the top three, and you do need the qualifying time too. Is that true? Yeah.
Yeah. So you have to have that qualifying time, and you have to be in the top three. Mm-hmm. I went into the trials. I had missed the Olympic trials qualifying time by a tenth of a second or something. And so we had this idea I would try to run a qualifying time in the prelim. I ran the hardest I thought I could, and I was still about 2 seconds off that. Yeah. So come the day of the finals, I mean, you're already exhausted. You just ran the hardest prelim of your life 2 days ago. Here you are going to do it again. And you just never know. On those final days, something magical can happen. And I ended up running 5 seconds faster than my personal best. I was well under the standard, and I was third. So everything lined right up.
Yeah. And what was that experience like, knowing that you were then going to go to London 2012?
You couldn't really believe it. I remember sitting there. I fell to the ground after crossing the line, and you know, you're you're hazy, your vision's like kind of blurry. And I kept trying to look at the scoreboard because I couldn't read the time. And I kept thinking, I'm reading it wrong. So really unbelievable is the best way to describe it.
And that's obviously, you qualify in the beginning of the summer, and then you've got this build up to the big dance. Kind of, what exactly. Was it like? Was it quite hard to stay, like, to keep your feelings in check and to keep training and focusing on the big one?
Yeah, it is. I'd say the biggest thing is you're almost trying to peak at trials, and then you say, oh man, we got to get back to training that's just as hard. You know, the next day it's, you know, forget about all the media. Mm. There's a bigger race coming up now. Mm. It was tricky, but yeah, you make it through. Yeah.
And going there, landing there at the village, obviously, us mortals can't imagine what the atmosphere is like in the village, all the athletes. What was that like being a part of that?
It's incredible. It's like its own little community. Mm. There's the different buildings for every different country. You're now all of a sudden rooming with these other phenomenal athletes you've heard of. You're bumping into them, you know, in the food area. Mm. Everyone's just, they're regular people all of a sudden. And you're also one of them, which is kind of the strange part. But it's totally fantastic.
Yeah. And did you go and do the things like the opening ceremony and that sort of thing? Were you involved in everything like
that? I did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I qualified also with my teammate, Emma Coburn. Mm. And so of course, both of us wanted to do the opening ceremonies together.
Yeah.
I don't think people realize you actually end up spending like 2 miles to walk into the stadium. So you've already been on your feet for a long time. And we didn't get out of there until like 1 a.m. because the fireworks, the whole show.
Yeah.
And then I remember we both decided, we're like, we just have to jog back to the village by this point and get to bed. So yeah, we finished that. We took off our shoes because they're very uncomfortable. And we started a little run back and then straight to bed.
And how did your experience go? What was the race like? So you made it through to the final.
I didn't. I actually ended up bruising my whole foot on a barrier. Didn't make it through. It was still a good race for me. I was still very close to my PB. Mm. Your first Olympics, that's all you can really hope for.
Yeah.
I was competitive in it, kept my head in the game. Yeah. So I was still happy with the finish.
Yeah, and it's an event where it's dominated by kind of East African runners. I don't know if it's to the same extent that the male one is, but it's still those girls are particularly fast. Is that daunting coming up against, you know, these girls who maybe can't jump that well but can run so fast?
I would say it's daunting, but then there's also this part where like you're in the call rooms with them and you realize everyone is just as nervous as you.
Mm.
I remember being in the call room in London and thinking like, we need to go over some hurdles here, you know. Mm. You're in the call room for almost an hour before and everyone's kind of nervous in their chairs, and I went and I put out a hurdle and I start jumping over it, and soon enough everyone in the call room is jumping over this hurdle with me. And it was kind of like this aha moment that like, we're all just as nervous. We all don't really know what we're doing.
Yeah.
And that almost, in a sense, kind of relaxed me. Kind of saying like, okay, this is all right.
Yeah. And obviously Emma's gone and is did she medal? She didn't medal at Rio.
She medaled. Yeah. She took bronze in Rio.
Okay, great. And is that great for you to see that, you know, a fellow American is doing so brilliantly?
Fantastic. Yeah. She's been by my side since day one with that first day hurdling.
Hmm.
When I was a freshman, really a lot of her success, just being kind of that year older than me, a year ahead of me, always showed me kind of my potential. You know, if someone from my school, someone, you know, training with me could do it, then I could do it too. So seeing her do that stuff has been great for me.
Yeah. And are you still, you're not training partners now, is she still down in
Boulder? We're not training partners. Yeah, she's in Boulder now and I'm in Vancouver. But we keep in touch. Whenever I'm back, try to catch up and grab a run with her.
Yeah. And what sparked the move to Vancouver then?
I wanted to start my PhD.
Okay.
I'd been in Boulder. I did my undergrad and my master's there, and I needed to kind of branch out.
Yeah.
Not become so kind of I don't want to say inbred in one department. So I wanted to work with some new people, some new scientists. So moved up to Vancouver.
And what's the PhD in? What's
your kinesiology?
Okay, great.
Yeah, it's the same field. Yeah.
Yeah, and how is the training up there? Are you able to train in the same way in Vancouver?
I'm trying the best I can. I kind of am always fitting my workouts and my runs in whenever I have a free moment. during my studies, but there's been a lot of great runners up here. The running community in Canada has been fantastic. So yeah, getting it done when I can.
Yeah. And Rio, how did that work out? So you obviously you finished London, you then
moved. Yeah, and then 2016 I finished fourth. Like we talked about earlier, you got to be in that top three for any country, and finishing fourth means you're the alternate and you stay at home.
Yeah.
So kind of a disappointment, but ran my heart out.
Yeah.
That's all you can do.
Yeah. And I mean, it's an incredibly competitive country. It's, you know, America's huge and all these lots of different great
it
athletes.
Is.
And
we sent a fantastic team in the steeplechase. So I know the right women went.
Yeah. And so now Tokyo is the next target. Are you...
That would be the next target.
How do you feel? Have the changes, the qualification standards, have they affected the women's steeplechase in the same way? Has there been as much furore?
I don't think in the women's steeple as it's as big of a difference. It's faster now, but the new standard for the steeple is 9:30. And in 2016, I think we had our top five were under 9:30. So it doesn't affect the steeple as much, but some of those other events for sure.
Okay. So you're not too worried about both the changes and the changes to the...
If you're making the US team, you're running under 9:30 regardless. So I don't think for women's steeple as big of a deal.
Yeah. And has the Diamond League, will the Diamond League include a 3,000 meters steeplechase this year for the women?
No, I have not heard final say, so I'm not sure.
Oh, okay. Is there a threat of cancelling it?
I would be surprised if they did. It's a unique event. I think spectators are really drawn out to watch the steeplechase. People love the water jump, the falls. It would surprise me.
Yeah. And it's funny, like, watching the distance events, even now, like, even before the changes were made, like, I find it slightly frustrating, the coverage, because I want to watch the steeplechase from start to the finish, but yet anyway, you watch 20 seconds, and then it's, you know, it'll be a pole vault. Pole vault's great, but I don't want to watch a pre-recorded pole vault. I want to watch people running around the steeplechase ground,
which is,
must be frustrating for an athlete to
it's
know.
It's very frustrating.
Yeah.
Here's the first 10 seconds. Here's one jump, and oh, they're finished.
Yeah. So I guess all your family at home waiting to watch, and suddenly this, it's cutting to something else, but sort of looking back over your career, what would you say has been your highlight then? What has been the moment that you felt you got the most out of yourself, or the moment you were most happy with your performance?
That's actually an interesting question. I know it might sound surprising, but I talked about in 2016 when I finished fourth. I was actually really happy with that performance. It was a big personal best for me. I ran the race really strong. It was in the rain. It was nasty conditions. And I think I learned a lot about myself as an athlete by not making the team. Kind of how you can handle the defeats and the bad days. It kind of lets you know, hey, even on a day that things don't go perfectly, I still want to be in this sport. So I kind of credit the 2016 Olympic trials to being a growing experience for my athletic self.
Yeah. And do you think it's like anything specific you've changed as a result of missing out, and you're changing in your training or your preparation now for Tokyo as a result of that experience?
I would say, I know it almost sounds bad, but I take a little pressure off myself. A lot of times I try to remind myself I'm a well-rounded human. I'm good at other things as well. Running doesn't define my whole life. I am also a scientist. I do good research. I like to cook things in the kitchen. So in a sense, it makes me always kind of zoom out and see myself as a whole and not put all my self-worth just on running.
Yeah, that's a good lesson. I think a lot of people don't do that. I mean, I certainly, I'm not competing at Olympic standard, but like, you know, you go out and you have a bad run, and it's your whole day's ruined by just a bad run. There's plenty of facets to my life.
All been there.
Yeah. Well, moving on then to your other life. So talking about being a scientist, you've done a series of study. I noticed, the reason I got in touch, I noticed some work you were doing on running economy. What is running economy to start with? What would you define as running economy for a layman listening to the podcast.
Yeah. So kind of a good way to think about running economy is to use the analogy of gas mileage. Hmm. So if you have a car that gets good gas mileage for a small amount of gas or energy, they can go a far distance. Hmm. Okay. So same thing with running economy. If somebody is very economical for a low amount of energy, or you could even think calories, they can go a far distance.
And how do you measure that as a scientist?
Yeah, so in the lab, we normally measure it by oxygen consumption and carbon dioxide production. With those two metrics, we can calculate it into joules or kcals, calories.
Okay. And the recent study, it was about how differences in running economy don't necessarily translate to performance. I guess it was about the 4%, was maybe related to the 4% shoe, perhaps, that was the result of that study. What was the findings you had from that?
So I'll start with the Vaporfly 4% shoe, since that's kind of a hot topic in the running community. So we actually, at the University of Colorado, were the ones to conduct that study. Mm. Nike had this prototype shoe. They said, hey, we think it's kind of interesting. Can you guys actually quantify the metabolic savings? Or they didn't say even savings at the time, just the difference in metabolic energy expended between this shoe and any other shoes you want to test. So we looked at the time, just this prototype Nike versus the Adidas Boost and then the Zoom Streak, just because those are two other very highly competitive racing flats. Mm. And we were actually blown away to find that in all 18 males that we tested, everyone saved energy. Mm. So they were all more economical in the Vaporfly shoe. Mm. And it ranged from 2% to 8%. So some people were saving up to 8% in that Vaporfly prototype shoe.
Wow.
So next part of that is Vaporfly now hits the market. Nike actually puts our 4% savings into the name of the shoe, which we thought was kind of cool. Mm. And then there becomes this idea that people think if something is 4%, saves you 4% metabolic energy, that you're going to run 4% faster. Mm. So the paper that you saw was kind of explaining why that isn't quite true.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. We follow along still?
Yes. Yeah. I got it. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So what's important to realize is when somebody starts to run faster, there becomes a higher resistance. There's more air resistance at those faster speeds. And to start with, it's not a linear relationship between running speed and metabolic cost. It's curved to start with. Mm. So you have this curve to start with, plus more air resistance at the faster speeds. And what it means is that when you're saving 4%, if you're running at a very high speed, your actual performance benefit is going to be a lot less than that metabolic savings to start with.
Okay. Okay. So for those faster guys, for Eliud Kipchoge, it's less likely to help him than it is for someone who is running a 4-hour marathon.
Correct. Exactly. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. I mean, that's even a better marketing sale for
them. It really is. yeah. And it's kind of hard for people to jump on board with that. Yeah. I think we say that, with the 4% metabolic savings, a 4-hour marathoner would run 4.2% faster, while someone running at the 2-hour marathon aid range would only save would only be 2.6% faster.
Okay.
With that same percent savings.
Okay. And did I see it was roughly related? There was a calculation where it was roughly equated to his 2:01 at Berlin. Did kind of match up in terms of your numbers?
It did. It matched up really nicely. I would put the caveat in there. We don't know what running economy really does over the course of a marathon. Right. Surely muscle damage is going to impact running economy. You can't say that it's all just the shoes. I mean, we know that the training is also going to be improving his running economy. Hmm. You don't know what the athlete is contributing to that and what technology is also contributing. So you can't pull those two things apart either.
No. Okay. But it's obviously a real glowing rendition, is not the word, but a recommendation of those 4% shoes. It shows they do make a difference to your ability to, well, not necessarily ability to run, but your economy while running.
Yes, the shoes will definitely, well, for all 18 subjects we saw, they all showed improvement in running economy. So my guess is that probably extends to greater populations of the running community.
Yeah.
And then also those slower runners are probably going to see more of a performance benefit than the elites are.
Okay. All right. Interesting. And what's also, you know, she did some research into steeplechase and what was that study about?
Yeah. So one of my early projects at University of Colorado was looking at the ground reaction forces that steeplechasers sustain during hurdling and water jumps.
Mm.
I think we all know how common it is for distance runners to become injured.
Mm.
So kind of quantifying those ground reaction forces during jumping had some injury implications.
Yeah.
And it was actually quite incredible. So during normal running, individuals will sustain about 3 times their body weight for each step.
Mm.
And what we found was when they were landing in the water jump, it could be up to 7 times their body weight.
Wow.
So that's huge. Those forces are really large.
Yeah.
Additionally, another thing we realized was whenever you land off the water jump or hurdle, individuals are landing on their forefoot as opposed to their heel. So someone like me that is primarily a heel striker, my foot is very much adapted to landing on my heel. I'm going to guess the bones have... been stressed there. They're more accustomed to those high forces on the heel. And so now all of a sudden when I'm landing on my midfoot, those bones haven't adapted as well. So just another thing for people to think about is that heel strikers that are doing the steeplechase might want to look at their metatarsals, maybe want to think about doing a few less hurdles and water jumps during practice because those forces are really high.
Wow. And is there anything you've learned through the course of these kind of the various studies that you've been doing that either shocked you and thought, I need to change and adapt my training as a result of this, or anything that you've gone in there with an idea and it's been reinforced by the studies that you've done?
I would say more ideas have been reinforced. I understand why I'm doing certain things now.
Hmm.
I would say the steeplechase, doing less hurdles in practice, that was something that actually did start to happen.
Hmm.
I was a good hurdler. I didn't need to do it a ton in practice, and especially if it was going to just be more wear and tear on the body, not worth it. Take out some of the jumps and save that for another time.
Yeah. Okay. And what's you working on now? What's the what's your PhD? Can you give
us an answer? So I've kind of moved a little bit from a biomechanics energetics world, and now up here in Vancouver, I'm in a respiratory physiology lab. It's primarily interested in respiratory muscles during exercise. How do changes in ventilation occur? How do muscles fatigue? A lot of studies are looking at the diaphragm. So I've kind of shifted, I wouldn't say the exercise part of it, but I've shifted from lower body maybe to thinking more about my upper body.
Okay.
To be more kind of more all-inclusive of everything.
Okay. And do you think, as a researcher and do you think these trends translate into coaching? Is there things that you would do maybe other than buying these £250 or $250 shoes? Is there things that we can do running to improve running economy you've learned from here that you've integrated into your own training?
Running economy is one of my favorite subjects just because it is, it's affected by so many things. I mean, your biomechanics, your nutrition, footwear, training, strength, all of those things really can impact running economy. And then just understanding how important running economy is for a distance runner, I think I pay more attention to the studies, you know, suggest improvements, whether it be a nutritional intervention or a new type of strength training. I'm more aware of it because I see the importance.
Yeah. And has running economy replaced, I think VO2 max is always the language we use. Is that replaced? Running economy replaced VO2 max as determinant of performance, or is that the currency we will talk about now as opposed to
VO2 max? That's kind of an interesting question. I definitely don't think we can get rid of VO2 max, and sure enough, if you're going down 10K, 5K, 3K, your VO2 max is becoming a lot more important. But I think marathoners need to shift away from thinking about VO2 max, and they should think more about running economy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fantastic. And obviously then your other love of cooking feeds into perhaps this running, your love of nutrition. And you have a website called, I've forgotten the name.
The Runner's Kitchen.
Yes, the Runner's Kitchen. That's easy. That's simple.
Yeah.
So you put on recipes and things and various things on there that people can see and follow for runners. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, cooking's a fun hobby of mine. There's definitely a science beat to it. I'll cite scientific articles and why I think it's important to eat in certain things. Whether that be some nutritional thing or whether it be the importance of making sure you have dessert in your diet. Yeah, it's kind of a fun passion of mine.
Yeah, fantastic. And obviously there's been, maybe not in the world of running, but in the world of ultra running, this has moved towards low carb and all these kind of diets, but you're definitely not. I saw from the cake.
That you made on the side, that's not... I'm not in that camp. Yeah, no. There definitely are people in that camp.
Do you find it difficult to when kind of those kind of people are given currency in the media to listen to their arguments about low carb diets and things, or is it just you know what you're doing and you're happy with your approach?
I mean, as long as we're talking about performance, I definitely am on the high carb camp. When people start talking about other reasons for other health implications, that's okay. But I'm an athlete. I'm focused on performance fueling.
Yeah, absolutely. And cake can certainly go to help that. Well,
cake's
nice.
Cake can definitely go to help that, of course. Yeah. Don't cut out cake.
Fantastic. I've got three final questions to ask you, and they're quick fire questions that I ask every interviewee. And they are, if you could be anywhere running now, where would it be?
Oh my gosh. It would be Boulder, Colorado, El Dorado Canyon.
Okay, nice. So second question is, can you recommend us something? So it could be something physical, like a book, film, TV show, or an experience you recommend our listeners try out.
Okay, so I'm going to go with book, and the book Mindset by Carol Dweck. It's fantastic. For an athlete, for a parent, for a student, for really anyone, it's great to think about how you're thinking about yourself, and how to improve your life.
Okay. And the third question is, in your opinion, what is the greatest endurance performance of all time?
Oh, Paula Radcliffe's woman's marathon record, 2:15. Oh my gosh, 26?
Yeah.
25? Like
okay. In the 20s,
I think that's incredible. Yeah. Nobody's touched that.
I think that's definitely been our most popular choice because it's just so incredible, really.
It is, yeah.
I always find it difficult to when speaking to laymen, so non-fans, and Paula's just remembered for going to Olympics and choking.
So
the greatest ever marathon runner, probably male or female, is remembered for not being able to win an Olympic medal, which is so sad. She's an incredible woman. Anyway. Yeah. Thank you very much for your time, Shaleya, and good luck.
Thank you so much for having me on.
No, it's been great to chat, and good luck with your with training for Tokyo, and we'll be looking out for more research on various areas of endurance performance.
Great, thank you.
Good stuff. Thank you. So a nice interview there with Shaleya. I'm certainly running out to buy those 4% shoes. I've got a bit of prize money from my marathon win. How many times am I going to mention the word marathon win this year?
You need the boost, but if it makes you feel good, you're probably going to run better anyway because all the chemicals in your brain that make you happy.
Exactly.
So,
yeah.
A placebo. It's going to make. Yeah, you need that. Yeah. You need that.
Fantastic. So we should talk about the Soul Grassroots Hero campaign. We've had a lot more nominations over the last few weeks. One I will just quickly pick out from Eric Carzenti, or Rico Nova, as he's known on Instagram. He nominated a really good one. He nominated Dame DeBarber. So Dame is a runner for Kent AC. He's also a refugee from Ethiopia. And a lot of people on the scene will know about Dame. But he basically a really... a rough story, fleeing from Ethiopia. He's part of the Oromo tribe, or Romo rather, I should pronounce that a bit better. And he, terrible story, but there's a really great article on The Guardian about the sort of stuff he's been through, which I'm going to put a link to. But yeah, pretty terrible. He managed to cross over to Europe. He walked incredibly. He was imprisoned for basically nothing, and he walked across Africa essentially to Libya, and where he tried to get across to Italy and managed with the help of some people smugglers to get over it. A really rough story, and he's over here now, and he's, you know, just a young man trying to make his way. He was stuck in the Calais refugee camp, called the jungle that people refer to, and he was actually the guy. If you watched a BBC program called Exodus, Our Journey Continued, which is a documentary about that Calais camp, Dame was on that show, and he now has moved to Lewisham, South London, and the people at Kent AC have really tried to help Dame out. It's a great story, although, well, not a great story for Dame, but he's such an inspiration to those people down in South London. So definitely a great nomination there from Eric. Keep those nominations coming in. We need to hear more nominations. We'd love to hear some people call up the WhatsApp line. I'll read the number again, +31 617 116121. Get us a nomination. We really want to honour those people you feel have made a difference to your life, who slave away, who work away purely for the love of the sport. And again,
unsung heroes.
We want to hear about them. And if you do that, it's a worldwide thing. So if anyone in America or anywhere else that any listeners come from, we want to hear about those people. If you want to nominate anyone, go on to letsgetrunning.co.uk/grassroots-hero. There's a form there, or you can even do a social post, as long as you tag in @_running and us @letsgetrunning. So that's the same across all channels. And you put the #grassrootshero. That will also enter whoever you nominate. But you do that, and there's a chance to win a Sort Elite Tempo Top for you, both the nominee and
about.
The nominee.
It's all about the jacket. It's all about the freebie. Jacket.
Yeah, so that's good. So please do that and get your nominations in. So yeah, we've got, unfortunately, no reviews to read out today, Jemaine. We have no actual written reviews. We've had reviews, ratings, but no reviews. I know Josh Hand on Strava, he said he's trying to work out how to do that through the medium that he was doing, but hopefully we're going to see some more next week. So get your reviews in, we will read them out live. Yeah, any help you can give to publicise the show is always good. Word of mouth's great, just telling people at your local running club or whatever else. We are really pleased to try and grow the show, and keep doing it.
We're up.
So what you got coming up next couple of days?
I've got to blimmin' get my, I don't know if I told you, someone stole my number plate on my scooter.
Oh yeah. Oh god, yeah.
little crooks. So obviously I've got to sort that out, but I was looking on DVLA,
yeah,
to try and bid for a new number plate.
Oh yeah, well, like a personalized one.
Yeah, a private plate. So there's, I saw one, it was MAY 51Y, so Maisie. Yeah, I was like, oh man, I gotta get that.
What about caramel with the L as a number one?
No, but it's like you can type the stuff in, but they just might not be available.
Okay, all right, yeah.
Because obviously they've got to be for sale, aren't they?
Yeah.
So
we should do a campaign. If you can find caramel or kid, caramel kid, I will try and get the listeners to donate.
There's another one I saw, and I said, you know, if I can't get the amazing one, my second choice is RUN 20K.
RUN run.
So run 20K.
Right.
I was thinking, I'd get it just because it says run. But I was thinking, everyone knows I don't do 20K.
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought of you. I was thinking, oh, maybe Sean will buy it off you.
Yeah. Right, I better go, and I can hear the baby in the background. I better go and see to her.
What are you doing? What are you up to this weekend?
I'm running 37K, I think, in a training run.
Okay.
Then I'm going on a boat ride, and then I'm going to be doing some sleeping. I think that's my plan. Oh, it's Grand National. Grand National Day. Yeah, I love Grand National Day. It's my favourite.
Are you going to put a little bet on?
Oh, I love a little bet. I love it. I go too far, though. So I better get my wife to hold me in check. I think it's also the National 12 stage this weekend for all those teams in the UK. Well, there's running clubs. It's the National 12 Stage Road Relay. So we and Jemaine used to love that race. fortunately we can't be over there. Go Highgate for this weekend. That's my team. Hopefully they'll have a good one.
Well, enjoy it. Up the gate.
Up the gate. Up the gate. Yeah, fantastic. We'll leave everyone to it and we'll catch back up next week. See you later, Jermaine.
See ya. Bye. Bye.
Bye. Bye.